Hi, folks. My name is Ben Appleby. I'm a program manager in the Exchange server product team. And we're going to be taking a look at the migration tools that are available for moving from Exchange on premises to Exchange online in this session. So the objectives are to look at all of the tools that are available natively from Microsoft, but we're going to look in detail at two specific tools, cutover Exchange migration and staged Exchange migration. And we'll look at some of the improvements that we've made to the those migration features since we launched Office 365. So throughout the session, we're going to talk about migration in four phases, which is plan, so choosing the right tool to perform your migration. And in order to do that, you need to understand your requirements correctly. Prepare is the things that you need to do before you start creating migration jobs or migration batches. Then the process that the migration engine will go through to move the data from on-premises into the mailboxes in Exchange Online. And then finally, the decommissioning steps once you've completed all of your moves. So you'll see this kind of four stages repeated throughout the session. So the kind of first rather obvious point is that there are a number of different factors that define a deployment plan. So it isn't just about which migration tool you want to use. And these are some of the things that play into that deployment plan or should play into that deployment plan. These are the four migration tools that are natively available for Exchange Online. IMAP migration is your general purpose migration tool. It will synchronize data from an IMAP compliant messaging system. So that's really the tool that you should be using for non-Exchange platforms. We're not going to be spending a great deal of time talking about that today. The middle two are the focus of this session. So cutover Exchange migration, the idea that you essentially sync all of your data from on-premises up into Office 365 and then do a big switch for all of the users. Staged Exchange migration is using the same technique and tools as cutover, but it's combined with directory sync so that you can specify each time you're creating a migration batch which users you want to move to Exchange Online. So you can do a few users at a time. And then finally, a hybrid deployment, which uses, the reason why I call it out separately here, though it's similar to staged in that you move batches of users at a time, it actually uses a different protocol to do the move. And there's a session this afternoon on hybrid where I'll cover that move process in more detail. And at the right-hand side, you can see the breakdown of, you know, depending on which version of Exchange or other messaging systems you have, what choices you have from the native tool set. It's also worth noting that there are a number of third-party migration tools out there for both Exchange to move to Exchange Online, but more importantly, third-party systems like Notes and GroupWise and so on. So before I go into too much detail about the specifics of cutover and staged and the process that you go through when you're creating a cutover migration to Exchange Online or a staged migration to Exchange Online, I'm just going to take a brief look at the protocol differences because they effectively determine the requirements that you have to meet for a migration. So this is looking at how cutover Exchange migration works. The important things to note here is that there are no additional servers. If you've got Exchange 2003 on-premises, you can support a cutover migration to Exchange Online. And the way that it works is that the directory data, so users, contacts, and groups, is copied from on-premises up to Office 365 using the Outlook Anywhere protocol. So when you've got remote users that are logging in to Exchange on-premises using RPC over HTTPS, that's Outlook Anywhere. So that same protocol can be used by Office 365 to log in to your Exchange environment on-premises and extract that data. So whilst the arrows are going from on-premises to Office 365, denoting the flow of data, the actual connection, the HTTPS connection, is from Office 365 into your on-premises Exchange environment. So we take users, contacts, and groups via the name service provider interface, which is within Outlook Anywhere, and we take all of the mailbox data via MAPI. So this is the same way Outlook is logging into your mailbox, the same way Office 365 will log into those source mailboxes and the global address list and extract all of that information and pull it into the cloud. So pretty simple. Now, if we take a look at staged, it's the same process. We're just layering on top of that tool directory sync. So instead of the migration engine pulling all the users, contacts, and groups across, if you deploy Active Directory synchronization, we leave that job to the DirSync appliance to take those objects across and keep them up to date. And it does that on a 3-hour schedule. But we still use Outlook Anywhere to access the mailbox data. And the difference between these two is the migration engine auto-detects where if you have directory sync deployed, so you've gone into the Microsoft Online portal and clicked activate directory synchronization. As soon as you do that, you're effectively enabling the migration tool to run in staged mode versus the cutover mode we saw on the previous slide. And then finally, how does this all differ from a hybrid move? Again, I'll cover this in more detail in the afternoon, but essentially the difference here is instead of we've got directory sync in the same way that we did for staged, and you can move a few users at a time, or you can do them all at once in one very big batch if you wish. But the major difference is that we move the mailbox data via a new service in Exchange 2010 called the Mailbox Replication Service. That therefore means you need Exchange 2010 present on premises. And that's really the big difference between these two solutions. One uses Outlook Anywhere, which is cut over and staged, and the other uses the Mailbox Replication Service, which is hybrid. So picking between these different solutions typically comes down to three things. How big is the organization that you're intending to move? If you've got a small organization, sort of 100, 150 users, then cutover is a really good, really fast, really cheap option for you to pursue. You can sync all of that data up to the cloud and do a switch over a weekend, and we'll talk through what that means today. It has some obvious inherent scale limitations, the idea that you switch everything at once. And so as you grow, if you look at the size of the organization that you're moving, as it gets larger, it pushes you into that staged bracket of needing to identify specific sets of users that you move at any time. The other piece to this is how long you're going to be in a migration state. For if it's going to be some months, it very typically means the business is going to demand a greater level of functionality from the coexistence element of the migration. And this kind of last set of things I refer to as features. It's the features that are available whilst you are migrating. And so at the bottom end, cutover, there are no features while you're migrating because it's a big switch. With staged, you get mail flow and a single address book. So if you move one user up into Exchange Online via Staged, they can still email everybody else that's back on premises, and they can see them in the address book. But that's about as far as the integration goes. There's no sort of true coexistence features there, per se. And then as you jump into the hybrid bucket, which is typically if you take the previous two stresses or requirements on a migration design, if it's large and it's going to take a long time, typically the business is going to ask things like free busy, secure mail flow, and other features that land you into the hybrid bucket. So it's piecing these three things together that allow you to pick between the different options that we're talking about today. So we're going to talk about the admin's experience of cutover. So what you do in order to create a cutover migration. And whilst we're looking at what you do, we'll be looking at what's happening under the covers as well. So a brief review. The maximum size of an organization that can use cutover is 1,000 mailboxes on premises. Frankly, I think 1,000 mailboxes via cutover is probably going to be quite a large undertaking. You need to reconfigure Outlook profile, create a new Outlook profile, and you need to communicate users' new usernames and passwords and such. And those kind of things tend to reduce your appetite to do very, very large batches. You need Outlook Anywhere. It's a fundamental to how cutover and staged are working. And the identity management in the cloud is really a reference to the fact that you're not going to be using directory sync. You can still do everything that you would in a cutover migration using the staged tools. Just instead of staged being a number of batches, it's one batch. So it's an important distinction that cutover is both a methodology and a tool. So when dirsync is not deployed, the tool will take you through a workflow which is cutover exchange migration, and we'll look at what that means. So these four phases, again, so from the plan phase, you want to make sure that you've read through the documentation and that you've defined a schedule for doing that move process. And that schedule needs to map on to the migration phase that we'll look at in a moment. So prepare is the things that you need to do before you go and try and create a migration batch. And it really falls into two main pieces that you need to do. First of all, you need to make sure that Outlook Anywhere is enabled and is accessible. And there are two pieces to Outlook Anywhere functioning. There is Outlook Anywhere needs to be on in Exchange, and you need the RPC proxy enabled in Windows Server. And you can verify that this is working using testexchangeconnectivity.com. It's normally the recommended way of diagnosing connectivity issues to Exchange. It definitely is for the cutover and staged tools, and in fact, the error messages within cutover and staged will point you back to testexchangeconnectivity.com. The other piece to the prepare phase for cutover, so you need Outlook Anywhere enabled. You also need a set of credentials that can access the mailboxes that you're wanting to move. So in cutover, that's all of the mailboxes. The simplest way to assign these permissions is to do it at database level. So there are two permissions that you can potentially use to allow cutover migration to access the mailbox data. There's the full access permission, which you assign at a per mailbox level. And there is the receive access permission, which you assign at database level. So you can choose between the two. For a cutover, it probably makes sense to use the receive as permission. And then finally, in the cloud, you need to verify that you own the domains that you're intending to move to Office 365. So if you have users that have an @contoso.com email address, you need to have registered contoso.com with Office 365 and created DNS records with the tokens to prove to us that you own it. So this is the sequence of events. Once you create a new migration batch, we will provision the users, contacts, and groups. So this is something specific to cutover, this provision phase. So we're logging into the Exchange environment on premises via Outlook Anywhere, and specifically the NSPI API, to go and synchronize all the mail-enabled objects that we find in the on-prem directory. Once that provision of objects has completed, we then start an initial sync of all the mailbox data. So an initial sync is essentially a full copy of all of the data that we find when we start the initial sync. And when we get to the end, we're going to write a watermark back to the mailbox. And at this point, once the initial sync is complete, we then perform an incremental sync every 24 hours. And so the incremental sync will go and check the global address list and see whether there are new users and groups that we need to take across. And it will also log into every mailbox and check for delta changes there as well. And so if you look at this process flow, the first four steps of create a migration, provision, initial sync, and incremental, these can happen well in advance of the migration or the cutover date. And that's how it allows you to have that control of this weekend I'm going to do a cutover. If you get this done well in advance of that date, then the incremental syncs are keeping the cloud mailboxes up to date, and it's really just your own processes for then switching those mailboxes across. So then the final two phases are you would switch somebody to Office 365, which is ostensibly reconfiguring the Outlook client. So if we look at this in a bit more depth, this is on the left-hand side is the Exchange control panel. This is where you create cutover and staged Exchange migration jobs. To create a migration batch, you click on the new button. It's at this point that it is detecting whether you have directory sync enabled or not for this tenant. If you have directory sync off, you're going to be doing a cutover Exchange migration. If you have directory sync on, you're going to be doing a staged Exchange migration. So this next dialogue is asking me, what do I have on premises? And for this particular example, I'm going to choose Exchange 2003. The only difference between Exchange 2003 and 2007 is that for Exchange 2007, we can use AutoDiscover to get all of these settings. Well, apart from the credentials at the top, we can use AutoDiscover to get the server settings that are on this page. So first point is a set of credentials that can access every mailbox you intend to move. You need the RPC over HTTP endpoint, and you need the mailbox server. These are the same settings that you would configure in an Outlook client, which is also another really good way to test this. You can use testexchangeconnectivity.com, and you can use just a normal Outlook client. And then finally, the authentication type, which is typically going to be basic, but it could also be NTLM. It depends on how you're publishing Exchange. And the number of mailboxes that you will allow us to move simultaneously. This is your dial for controlling how quickly we will try and suck data off your Exchange server. You need to be a little bit careful with this, particularly if it's a very old Exchange system that's running on old hardware, slow disks. You don't want to whack that dial up to the max and then have us have a performance impact on your existing Exchange environment. Then on the right-hand side, it is describing the topology that we're expecting to see. So at the point at which you create the migration job, we're expecting the MX record to point to on-premises, all of the clients to be pointing to the on-prem Exchange server, and everything just working well before you start the move. And then finally at the bottom, when you create a migration batch, before we allow you to create it, we're going to test the details that you've provided us. So we're going to test the credentials, I'm going to test the connection settings. And like everything in Exchange, we do it through commandlets. And so the web page that you're using under the hood is also using Exchange commandlets. So you have a choice. You can either use this UI, this web-based UI, or you can take the commandlets at the bottom of the page that we're calling on your behalf and call them direct. So at that point, providing you've provided credentials and connection information that works, you give the batch a name, and you tell us where we need to send the migration report, and away you go. New migration batch is called, and you can move on to the next phase. It gives you a quick assessment once you get to this point of how many mailboxes we found, and just reconfirming the settings that you're using. So at this point, all you've done is created a migration batch, and all we've done is checked that the settings that you gave us will work by logging into the source server. We actually haven't started moving any data. That happens when you start the migration batch. And so as soon as you click that start button, we're going to start the provision phase. As soon as that's complete, we'll start the initial sync phase. And so that really can take as long as it needs, providing you've done enough planning and you've created this well in advance, the cutover point. There's no effect on your users. There's no communication that you need to make. This can just sit there in the background moving the data across. So if you have an old Exchange system that's running slowly and you don't feel comfortable running that many simultaneous jobs, just plan it in advance and let it run at its own speed. So whilst the migration batch is running, there's very fine-grained reporting data that's available to you. And so this is really the big change. The two big changes that we've made since Office 365 shipped is the idea of supporting batches or multiple batches, which in a cutover context doesn't really mean a great deal because you're only ever going to have one batch. So although you see that you've created a batch here, if you're doing cutover migration, that's the only one you're ever going to create. And the other big change is the reporting information and the kind of analytics that you can get out of the migration engine so you've got confidence that things are moving and you can see where things aren't. So in this particular example, we can see that it's running, see how many mailboxes it's found, how many are synced, and how many are in active initial sync. And so you can also pull out detailed reports, and you can see individual users listed in this report and then drill into those individual users. And again, as it's Exchange, we make all of this information and more available via PowerShell. So you can script and create your own reports very easily. And if that's not enough, we also email you this information. And so you can download statistical report. And inside there, which is particularly pertinent for a cutover Exchange migration, because the migration engine is the thing that is provisioning and creating these new mailboxes in Office 365, we're also going to be setting the password for these users. And so it's in this report you can find the initial password. And so when the initial sync has completed, you will see the state change to synced. And from that point, it's going to be doing incrementals. The incremental sync is throttled by Exchange Online. So if there's massive changes on premises, there's a chance that Exchange Online is not going to keep up. And you can see that from the migration statistics. So once you've moved through that migration phase, you're now ready to switch all of your users across. And the key to this is changing the MX record so all new email is being sent to Exchange Online. What that effectively means is that if you were to just stay at this point in time, your users would be logged into their mailbox, they would stop receiving new email, and the incremental sync would stop having any new data to take up to Exchange Online. The art is to get the timing of these two events, the MX change, in time with the client move. So you would switch the client applications across. So Outlook Web App is about communicating a new URL to your users. And the Outlook client is about creating a new profile and using auto-discover to find Exchange Online. The other thing to note here is that the incremental sync was still in place at that point. So if you want to switch the MX record and then immediately move the clients across, there's going to be some messages that may still hit that on-prem server. Those few messages that arrive in that switchover period will be picked up by the fact that you've still got an incremental sync in place. So it's always a good idea to leave the incremental sync and the decommissioning phase at least 24 hours to make sure that that's captured every last bit of data from on-prem and synced it up. But once you're satisfied that that's been done, and you're going to be getting rid of that Exchange server on-premises, then you should just go and remove the migration batch. It stops Office 365 attempting to find and sync incremental data, and it stops you getting nag emails. So cutover was predicated on the idea that you don't have directory sync deployed. Doesn't mean that you won't deploy directory sync in the future. And one of the common reasons why customers will use cutover Exchange migration and then turn directory sync on is for single sign-on. So single sign-on or identity federation requires directory synchronization. And there's a process, if you follow this link, there's a process called soft match that you can use after cutover. So you've got all of your mailboxes in the cloud. They have their usernames and passwords for cloud IDs. And you can go and deploy directory sync on premises and then deploy a single sign-on or an ADFS server to enable the logon to Office 365 to use your on-prem credentials. You can also choose to do directory sync and ADFS before you start the migration. And if that's the choice that you make, then you're going to be using staged Exchange migration for the move of data. So a quick review of what staged is. Staged is the same piece of technology that we used for cutover. So this ability to log into your source environment using the Outlook Anywhere protocol. But the difference is it allows you to move a few users at a time in what we refer to as batches. The other thing that's worth pointing out is that it's a solution for Exchange 2003 and Exchange 2007. Stage does not work for Exchange 2010 and beyond. And the reason for this is pretty simple. Exchange 2010 natively supports the mailbox replication service, which is, rather than being designed as a client access protocol, it's a mailbox move protocol. So it's a better solution, certainly if the mailbox is hosted on Exchange 2010. So first and foremost, you should be using the mailbox replication service over staged Exchange migration. It's a higher fidelity process. The other is a technical constraint. The way that we make staged work to allow you to move a few mailboxes at a time and still keep mail flow going is at the beginning of the move process, we write a target address back to the source mailbox. We write that target address over NSPI, And what that means is that any mail coming into the on-prem mailbox is going to be forwarded up to Exchange Online. And so that allows us to move those handful of mailboxes up first whilst you leave everybody else on premises. So that's great. That method of writing the target address back to on-premises over NSPI is only supported on 2003 and 2007. That NSPI interface in 2010 is read-only, and that's due to an architectural change in 2010. So the plan and prepare phases are very similar. So we're not going to cover them in a great deal of detail for stage. We're really just going to focus on the difference in the migration flow. So it's a much shorter process, you'll see, for a staged. And it's because there is a simple switch round in the steps. In cutover, you sync all of your data up, and then you leave it running incremental syncs until you're ready to switch all mailboxes at once. In staged, as soon as you've created the job, we will immediately write the redirect to on-premises. And so you move the user at the beginning whilst we're syncing the data up to Exchange Online. So the data essentially follows the user. And so what that means from a process flow is that you create the migration batch, and then it does an initial sync of the data, of the mailbox data. There's no users, contacts, and groups because directory sync does that for us. And we don't need to do an incremental sync because we've written a forwarder to the mailbox on premises. So any new email from the start of the migration is going to be forwarded to the new cloud mailbox anyway. So we simply need to do a one-time copy of all of the mailbox data up to the cloud. And that's why it's this compressed process. And so the starting point is the same as before. The MX record is pointing to on-premises. And you're going to the same place within the Exchange Control Panel, the email migration tab, to create the migration batch. This time the batches have slightly more meaning. Each batch is the one or more users that you want to move at any given time. And the other important thing to note, particularly if you've got a dispersed Exchange environment on premises, is that the connection settings can be different for each batch. So if you've got a bunch of users that are in London and you've got a bunch of users that are in Paris, and you have different Exchange front-end or client access server endpoints for those sites, you can create a migration batch for London users, and you can create a migration batch for Paris users using different settings. This screen is how you know that you are running staged. So up until this point, the choices are the same. You've got to put in some migration settings. As soon as you hit the which users would you like to move, that's a, by very different definition, a staged move. And you simply provide a CSV file that has a list of the primary SMTP addresses of the mailboxes that you would like to move, and you give the batch a name. So this is an example. You also have the ability to define passwords at this point. And then again, where would you like the report to be sent? And so this is showing a number of batches that have been created. The one that we just created is at the bottom. And as soon as the migration batch has been created, you can then start that migration. Now, in cutover, that start meant we were going to provision all the users, groups, and contacts and do the initial sync of data. For staged, it means we're going to write a target address back to every mailbox that you've listed and do an initial sync of the data, and there will be no incremental. So once you've clicked start, any new email for the users that are within the batch will be forwarded from Exchange on-premises to Exchange Online. That forwarding process here is going to use your sign-up domain. So whenever you create a tenant in Office 365, You give that tenant a name, and you get given a domain, which is tenantname.onmicrosoft.com. That's the same domain that we use for this forwarding. So providing your Exchange system can effectively forward email to the internet, it will use that path to find the MX record for tenantname.onmicrosoft.com and forward the email into Exchange Online. It's important to note that at this point, whereas in the cutover process, it was when you got to the very end and you switched the MX record over, that no new email will be received on premises. For staged, it's at the beginning of the process. Once you've started the migration job, no new email for those users will be received. All new email is being forwarded. So it's at that point you can move the clients across. And whilst that's happening, we're going to start syncing all the data up. And like cutover, you get detailed reports sent to the mailbox you specified in the batch. So this is a specific thing that you need to think about if you have Exchange 2007 on premises, and it's how you handle auto-discover. So when you're running a staged Exchange migration, whilst the migration's underway, you have a mailbox on premises and you have a mailbox in the cloud, and we're syncing the data from the mailbox on premises to the cloud mailbox. Once that's complete, you really want to convert this source object into a mail-enabled user. And the simple reason for this is if Outlook attempts to contact the Exchange environment on premises via auto-discover and say, have you got a mailbox for Ben and can you give me his settings, it's going to look at its environment and it's going to see the old mailbox there and say, sure I do. Here's the URLs. Try and log in to me. And if the end user logs into that old mailbox, they're going to see a mailbox that's not updating and is not receiving new email because they've been moved. And so the simple way around that is you take the CSV file that you provided to the Exchange staged Exchange migration, and you run a script that will convert those mailboxes to mail-enabled users. What that means is if the Outlook client at that point goes and contacts the old Exchange on-premise server and says, do you have a mailbox for Ben? It will reply with, no, but I know where it is. It's over there in Exchange Online. It passes back an auto-discover redirect, at which point the Outlook client will go and chase down that redirect. That redirect, by the way, is going to the same tenantname.onmicrosoft.com domain. It's actually going to autodiscover.tenantname.onmicrosoft.com, which resolves to autodiscover.outlook.com. And when it hits that endpoint, the user has to type in their cloud credentials and auto-discover does everything else for them. If you have Exchange 2003 on-premises, you don't need to do any of that script stuff. You can leave the old mailbox on-prem. And the reason's simple. Exchange 2003 didn't support auto-discover. So the process that you should follow if you have Exchange 2003 is shift any auto-discover DNS records you have over to Exchange Online. Well, in fact, if you have Exchange 2003, you won't have any auto-discover DNS records. So create them, point them up autodiscover.outlook.com, and you do this at the beginning. Outlook won't be able to find an auto-discover point for Exchange 2003. It will attempt to find auto-discover, and if you are a cloud mailbox, your mailbox has been moved to Exchange Online, you will contact autodiscover.outlook.com, provide it credentials, and ask it whether it has a mailbox for that user, and it will respond with URLs, and Outlook will be happy. If a user that hasn't been migrated for some reason is rebuilding their profile and is attempting to use AutoDiscover, even though their Exchange 2003 system on-premises doesn't support it, and up until that point, they've always been manually configuring these settings. If they did attempt to go down that path, they will attempt to log in to Exchange Online. If they've got a set of creds, Exchange Online is going to reply with, I don't have a mailbox for you. And the auto-discover process will fail, which is pretty much the same process that would happen if they weren't deploying Exchange Online. If you attempt to use auto-discover against an Exchange 2003 environment, you're not going to get very far. And then the final phase is decommission, which is the same cleanup process as cutover. You go and remove the batch, and you can go and decommission those servers on premises. So it's worth looking at the copy algorithm, particularly for staged, where you have this window where you're going to put users into the cloud before all the data might be there. You can minimize this, by the way, obviously, by running some of this stuff overnight. So for an initial sync, we're going to mirror all the folders and copy latest first, oldest last. And it'll do this across all of the folders until you have a full set. And then the incremental does adds and deletes. And so adds are taken across newest first again. So there's a variety of things that can cause problems with both migration paths. And this is what we're going to take a look at now. Talked a little bit about performance. And you have this dial to control how many concurrent migration jobs are run at any one time. It's in order to increase that dial, you need to be looking at the kind of four core computing bottlenecks on your source environment. You need to be making sure that it's got CPU, memory, disk, and network to be able to cope with the increased load of a migration. If you're not sure about this, you should be testing and looking at the environment. I think it's slightly risky to be starting a migration job without at least taking a look at what these, where your server is currently running at for these four things. And so these are the counters that we recommend that you go and look at. And so if you're satisfied that your on-premise server can take an increased load, you can increase the concurrency level. And one of the things that we've done since shipping Office 365 is allowed you to increase that dial higher. So originally, you could only set a maximum of 10 concurrent jobs at any given time. Now you can set a maximum of 50. The other thing, again, a fairly simple technique to improve performance, so allow you to run that many concurrent sessions with actually having a minimal impact on your source environment. If you have multiple mailbox servers, try and create a batch that uses mailboxes evenly across those servers so that you're having an even distribution of the migration load across your Exchange environment. And so next, probably the biggest cause of issues with any Exchange migration is connectivity, and whether you are correctly publishing the Outlook Anywhere protocol to Exchange Online. And so if you've got Exchange 2007 on premises, you can use AutoDiscover, and this is a screenshot showing AutoDiscover effectively failing. The best place to get really detailed, granular view of what's causing those failures is testexchangeconnectivity.com. And so this is an example of what you would need to go and do. You want to go and take the Outlook Anywhere test from the testexchangeconnectivity.com, and you plug in the same details that you would provide the Exchange migration tool. So you provide the same connection settings and same credentials. And if you're using AutoDiscover, you would specify that here. and it goes off and tests two main things. It tests AutoDiscover if you're using it, and it tests RPC over HTTP. And then it gives you a detailed breakdown. Now, in this example, there's a lot that's gone wrong here. Nothing's worked, essentially. And we're going to take a little look at what might be causing it. And so you can see here that we've tried AutoDiscover, various different methods, and none of them work. And so this is some tips on where you should go to try and troubleshoot some of these problems. In this example, I have Outlook Anywhere published under the wrong external host name. So it's got xmig5.info, and actually externally, the public DNS domain that we've been using is semmigration.info. This is something that you will see a lot, particularly in environments where they've used internal non-public DNS domains, and where you might be using VPN and other things to do remote connectivity to Exchange. You may never have used Outlook Anywhere up until this point. So the fix in this particular instance is to set the external host name to a DNS record that's actually published out on the internet and that resolves to your Exchange front end or client access server. So at this point, it's now resolving the host name, but there's still a problem, which is the SSL certificate. And this is kind of your next big category of connectivity problems, is that the certificate is either still the self-signed certificate that gets installed with Exchange, or it doesn't have the right domain name listed. So the certificate needs to come from a publicly trusted certificate authority, so VeriSign and the like. And then once you've verified that the certificates come from a trusted source, you need to check that the name, the DNS name you're connecting to and the certificate that was handed back for SSL negotiation match. And that's this check here. And in this particular example, we can see on the certificate domains that semmigration.info is not listed. And so the only way that you can resolve that is by creating a new certificate request and cutting a new certificate. You either do that or you change the DNS name that you're connecting to. It's one of those two. So and finally, you need to ensure that the certificate's enabled on IIS. And so at this point, you're getting all green, apart from one bit of red at the bottom, which has an explanation for it. This, as I mentioned earlier, you can't do a staged move when your RPC HTTP CAS endpoint is Exchange 2010. And that's because the technique that we're using to set the redirect on the on-premise mailbox doesn't work for 2010. That interface is read-only, and we will attempt to do it and fail, which is what's written in this log output. So if you see this error, failed to set the on-premises target address, this is because the endpoint is 2010, and it's not a supported scenario. You should go and use Hybrid and Mailbox Replication Service to move this mailbox. The advantage here is that you have everything in place. If you've got 2010 on-premises, you've got the CAS server published to the internet, which you would have to have in order to get to this point. It's simply a matter of you're using the wrong tool, and you need to use EMC and right-click remote move request rather than going to the email migration tab in Exchange Online. Large messages and CRUD messages are something that we see frequently. The logic within cutover and staged Exchange migration is to skip large items. So the maximum message size in Office 365 is 35 meg. So if we find items that are over 35 meg in size on premises, we're going to skip them. and you get a full report of what those items are and the subjects associated with them at the end of the migration batch. So you have something to go and communicate to your users that these were the messages that weren't taken across. And actually, that's a mistake from an old version of the deck. I should update this. 25 meg was the maximum message size when we launched Office 365. We've updated that max message size to 35 meg based on feedback. And so it's a similar process for bad messages. If you've got an old Exchange environment, it's very possible that you have bad or corrupt messages in there, and it's probably quite likely that your users don't even notice, because there'll be old messages that they've not accessed in a very long time. Again, you get a full report of this. So this is an example of a report. So we're looking at user one on the left-hand side, and then the skipped items on the right-hand side for this user. And so you can see which folder, which subject for all of these messages. And so you can get a PowerShell output of the content that's not been migrated. This is very useful if you've got a number of users that have these handful of large items and trying to communicate to them, rather than going through the GUI and getting all the reports out that way. If you want it in a format that's easier for you to disseminate, then you can use PowerShell. And so this shows you a list of skipped items, and you can export this to XML, CSV, and so on. And you can choose which bits of this data you would pass on to your end users. And this same process is available for corrupt items. If you're having problems with the auto-discoverer, I would encourage you to go back to the previous slides where I talked about that auto-discover process for staged Exchange migration. You shouldn't need to worry about auto-discover for cutover, because essentially you're going to move all users at once. And with that big switch, you're going to move the MX record and auto-discover external DNS record over to outlook.com. So staged is the only scenario where you need to think about it a little bit. If the mailbox is on Exchange 2007 on premises, you should, once the migration has been completed for that batch, you should convert the source object from a mailbox to a mail-enabled user. And then finally, if you see any internal errors from the migration engine, these are exactly as they sound. So a migration batch is something that's run in Office 365, and where we have things that are down to the information that you provided us, such as the connection information, or the credentials you provided, you get an error that's specific to that information. Where there is an issue with the migration batch, which is actually due to something happening inside the Office 365 data center, is flagged as an internal error. And you can extract the detailed information by running this command. You shouldn't see these, but if you do, you want to take this information and provide it to Microsoft support. They're rare, but there are things like a server being put into having a fault whilst you're running the migration job. It may temporarily have an internal error whilst it's being picked up by another server. And so finally, we're going to look at the end user experience and be really clear about what we do and don't migrate across. Both cutover and staged Exchange migration are high fidelity moves. We take all the obvious stuff. We take folder structure. We take in the MAPI data and so on. But there are a couple of things where we either take the data across and it may need to be tweaked, or there's some items that we don't take across. So first of all, looking at the end user experience, Outlook after a migration looks like it did before a migration. The difference is they're not receiving new email. So it's down to you as the admin to make sure that they, A, do their first logon, unless you're using single sign-on, their first logon needs to be done via a web page. It needs to be done via, they need to go to portal.microsoftonline.com, where they will be asked to set their new password. You can choose to take the reset password on next logon flag off these users, and you can also choose to set an initial password of your own choosing. But for obvious reasons, it does make sense that they get a random initial password, which is what the migration tool will provide them, and that they change that password themselves the first time they log in. Until they've completed this step, you can't use the Outlook client. The Outlook client doesn't have any capability to present you this information. So rather than pop up a, you need to change your password, the credentials simply don't work. So once the password's been changed, you would then go and add the new Outlook profile. So you should remove the old one, add the new one. Providing you've done the tweaks to control auto-discover, this works just fine. So there's a couple of things that don't come across. We take Outlook rules, but there are some types of rules where you need the user to go and re-resolve, say, the flag or the folder. And so this is a fairly simple process for the users. They'll see where there's a rule that they need to re-resolve. It'll be in red. So there's clear instructions you can provide them post-move. Go and open up your rules if you use them. Where they're red, click through them and just re-resolve the fine detail of how that rule is supposed to operate. So these are some of the things that are not migrated. We don't take across non-mail enabled items such as plain old security groups. If you think about the way that cutover exchange migration is provisioning the objects from on-prem into Exchange Online is essentially reading your global address list. And so anything you don't see in the global address list, we're not going to take across. In addition, for staged exchange migration, whilst it will take across security groups, they're not actually synced into Exchange Online. Security groups have no, plain non-mail enabled security groups have no function in Exchange Online. There's no way you can use them for anything, so there's no point of syncing them in. So for both cutover and staged, security groups are not taken across. Dynamic distribution groups are one of those exceptions to the we take everything that's mail-enabled across. Although a dynamic distribution group is mail-enabled, the queries and filters that you can put on a dynamic distribution group on premises can specify a whole variety of things that just don't exist in the cloud, like all users that are in OU sales, or all users that are on mailbox database A. Those concepts don't exist in Exchange Online. Whilst there is, you know, a particular mailbox database that a user will be housed on, it's not something that you need to worry about any longer. So for that reason, there isn't an automated process for taking dynamic DLs across. So you need to identify them in advance and go and create them direct in Exchange Online. If it really is something that just directly transposes from on-prem to Exchange Online, so let's say you're producing a dynamic DL for all users that have custom attribute 1 set to sales, then you can simply take the same settings that you use to create the dynamic DL on premises and execute the same PowerShell command in Exchange Online and it will recreate it. For those that use different, that use settings that don't transpose, you will have to work through how you're going to recreate that dynamic DL. We don't take items from the recover deleted items folder or dumpster. They're not taken across. We also don't migrate the send as permission. So there are two very similar permissions in Exchange. There's send as, which is an administrator assigned permission for sending as another mailbox. There is also send on behalf of, which is commonly confused with send as. Send on behalf of is an end user assigned permission. It gets assigned when you're adding a delegate to your mailbox. And send on behalf of is taken across. Send as is not. And so the challenge here is you need to identify the send as permissions before you start the migration and go and recreate them in the cloud. The advantage is that as the administrator, you'd be the only person setting these in the first place. So once you've done that one time, find all of the send as permissions and go and set them again in the cloud, you're done. So this is a look at what is migrated. And it's an awful lot. It's essentially that full Outlook experience that your end users have on premises today is preserved when they move to the cloud. And it's all the kind of fine-grained detail stuff like flags and categories, contacts and tasks and such, the color coding in your calendar. This is all the kind of stuff that identified late in a migration can cause you a significant headache if there's some loss of fidelity here. Delegate permissions, so this is the send on behalf of permission that I referred to earlier, plus the individual folder permissions, your OOF messages and distribution groups and so on. And so at that point, you've moved to Office 365. And this is just recapping what we said we were going to talk about, which is a review of the tools that there are available for a native move from Exchange on-premises to Exchange Online, and a deep dive into cutover and staged. These are the other sessions that are on Exchange this week. This afternoon, I will also be presenting a session on hybrid, so it'll be a deep dive into that third Exchange migration option that we touched on in this session. That's it. So any questions, folks? That's very true. So the question, or the point, was that I only alluded to setting receive as permission on the source environment in order to migrate the data up to the cloud, and that for staged, you also need the account operator permissions. It also called out in the deck domain administrator permissions. So yeah, thank you for pointing that out. You're right. Sorry. In terms of looking, I missed part of the question.
So when some items escape for some reason for the stage of migration, you can list subject for these items, you know, so I can identify what these items are. Could I do this for also for the migration? Like list the subject for these items?
I don't believe you can, no. I'm afraid not. So the question is whether you can see the detailed subject items that I showed for skipped messages for the IMAP migration path, and I don't believe you can. Yes? Yeah. No, and if you want to preserve them, that's something you should be doing with hybrid. Retention policy tags are synchronized from on-prem to the cloud, but there's some specific steps beyond just letting DirSync do its stuff to make that work. So if you want to reserve retention policy tags, you should be using the hybrid migration toolset. Sorry, Mom.
I found
The question is, for cutover, does it synchronize both creation and deletion of messages in the source environment when it moves into that incremental phase, based on the observation for IMAP, that IMAP only copies new messages over when it gets into that incremental phase? And the answer is yes. The reason for the difference is that for a cutover exchange migration, we can be a lot smarter about analyzing that source mailbox, and we actually write a piece of data back into it to keep track of deletes. New emails are fairly easy to spot from a date-time perspective, so we can do that for IMAP. But we don't have the smarts within the protocol to say, you deleted message, you know, A, delivered at this time, and therefore safely propagate that to the cloud. So that's why IMAP does not support that feature. Sorry, there was a question over there. So Outlook 2003 is not supported in Office 365. So you would need to be, if you've got an Outlook 2003 client on the desktop, you need to uninstall it and or upgrade to Outlook 2007 or greater. So the question is, how do we handle delegates when the presumably the delegatee and the delegator are separated across different batches? It's a good question, good clarification point. So whilst we take delegates across and migrate them, both for staged and hybrid-based moves, delegates are not coexisted. So whilst you've got, you know, one user that has delegated their mailbox, a manager has delegated to his team or his assistant, and you move the manager over to Office 365, whilst we're copying those ACLs across, the team aren't going to be able to access his mailbox or his calendar whilst they're still on premises. So if they're separated across multiple migration batches, there's a period of time where they're broken, which is between the batches. But once they're both reunited in the cloud, those delegate permissions start to work again. Does that answer the question? So that script is specifically for a staged move from Exchange 2007. If you're doing a cutover move, you've switched all of the users over to Exchange Online. If you have an auto-discover record pointed to that Exchange environment on premises, it's not serving any purpose by that point. So you just remove it. So there is a conversion process. You only really need to perform it for Exchange 2007. The reason why you might do it on Exchange 2003 in staged is for a slightly different requirement. Beyond the technical need of trying to make auto-discover work, the script that you can also be used to free up servers that you are ready for decommissioning ahead of other servers that you're still migrating from. So that's one of the other reasons why there's more scripts. Sorry, could you speak up a little? Yes. Good question. So the question is, if you are using cutover and new mailboxes are created during the initial sync phase, or even the incremental, will they be able to participate in the cutover? The answer is yes, but you should verify that they've been picked up. The incremental should spot new user creation, because the incremental for a cutover will look at the directory as well as mailbox data. Okay, thanks very much, guys.